today's episode of the Iconic Podcast, as always, brought to you by Iconic Clothing Company. Recording this on a Thursday night, June 6th, night after the Raptors went into Oakland, took care of business, beating the Warriors in Game 3, handedly in Game 3. Banged up Warriors squad, but absolutely nobody feels bad for them in the world. But Klay's going to come back in Game 4. I expect the Warriors to take care of business in Game 4. If you go back to the playoff preview Bo and I did way back in April, you know, I did say that the Raptors were going to be a kind of a dark horse team, that a lot of people talking about them going into the playoffs. They kind of took care of business. Kawhi didn't play on the back-to-back, sat out a lot of games. The Raptors were kind of just the Raptors in the regular season. I said, yeah, I think Kawhi's definitely got a second gear. We've seen it in him before when he's in San Antonio, but I didn't expect this. You know, I expected the Bucks and Raptors to be playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. I did say that in April. But I did expect the Bucks to take care of business against the Raptors. But oh no, Kawhi Leonard has put it into a different gear, a better gear than he was in San Antonio. And Danny Green, too, has been lights out this series. I'm not going to give Kyle Lowry any credit, but he did play pretty well last night. I'm not a huge Kyle Lowry fan, but regardless, I digress. All right, anyway. Like I said, we've been away for a minute. It's been a minute since we recorded. We were pumping them out there in May with all types of different guests, but things have slowed down a little bit between work for me and Bo's at KOMU, just punching in hours. Kid's up at 5 a.m. and he's back at in the lab at 11 p.m. The guy's going nuts out there. So shout out to Bobby to getting a lot of different types of stories and segments done here. We're gonna kind of mush them all together. It's gonna kind of be a new segment. You know, when we're away for a little bit, we got a lot of different things. We're obviously making content still, but we're not always putting it out as timely as normal. But in this episode, we got a two-parter. So in the first half is going to be all San Diego Padres and all Milwaukee Bucks. It's basically the Bo fan podcast, if you will. If you're a fan of the Milwaukee Bucks and if you're a fan of the San Diego Padres, which I know a lot of people of you are out in San Diego, getting Bo's takes on the Padres is a must for y'all. He's going to kind of break down their first 2 months, 3 months of the season. The Padres have they've held their own. You know, this is a really young team, and Bo's going to break that down and kind of what he wants to, I wouldn't say predict, but what he kind of forecasts for the summer months and how well they'll play and if they're going to be in the playoff picture come, you know, the later months of August and September, obviously. And then he's going to recap the Bucks season. By no means a disappointment of the season. Obviously, for a team that didn't lose a back to or lose three games in a row all year, to lose four in a row to Kawhi and the Raptors, that's got to be soul-crushing and heartbreaking. I've been there for you, Bob, but the Raptors were just the better team those last four games in the Eastern Conference Finals, but nothing to be ashamed of that type of season. It was an incredible season for the Bucks. Bo's going to break that down all in part one. Part two, it's fight night with Bobby Buckets. Two huge fights that happened since our time off. The Deontay Wilder fight, if you want to call it a fight. He's going to break down every little aspect of that fight. Wilder just taking care of business in round one. That absolute smoke of a punch just destroys. I forget who he was fighting. That's bad on me. But Bo's going to bring that all down for you, as you know he always will. And then the second part of the fight night podcast is the upset in the heavyweight. Andy Ruiz comes out of nowhere, steals the show, takes down Anthony Joshua. Bobby Buckets going to take care of all that for you in part two. So part one, Bucks, Padres. Part two, Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz. Who else we got? Deontay Wilder, excuse me. So those two fights, he's going to break that down. And then lastly, for those of you who want my 2 cents on the ball, I'm going to take these previews all the time and give my 25 seconds on the Bulls. You know, last time I did this preview, it was the night of the lottery. I was depressed. Depressed is a strong word, but I was pretty down on the Bulls' chances going into the offseason. Now a lot of things mixing up. Kyrie Irving to Brooklyn rumors. Does that mean D. Russell is going to be an unrestricted free agent? He's currently a restricted free agent. I don't think that backcourt in Brooklyn is going to work. Do the Bulls make a move there? I would like to see it. I don't know how him and LaVine would fit defensively, but any type of talent coming to Chicago, especially at the point guard position, desperately need it. And then also I said the pick at 7, why not Kobe White? I'm still pretty decently high on Kobe White. I really like what he did in his 1 year at North Carolina, but it's kind of cooled down for me a little bit. Now that I think about it, I really would like to see the Bulls be more aggressive in free agency for a point guard because there's so many good NBA-ready, NBA-proven point guards that are going to be out on the market this year between Pat Beverly and, as Russell, as I said, is going to probably be a commodity in this coming month. I wouldn't mind if the Bulls stayed away from point guard in this draft. Maybe get somebody at 38, Shamari Ponds from St. John's, excuse me, and then maybe Ty Jerome from Virginia. Something that, you know, a guy you take a risk on in the second round. Maybe he makes team, maybe he doesn't. And then in the draft, there's so many two-way wings or so many, you know, high ceiling wings between picks 6 and 10. And I think also Coby White might have gotten a promise from the Phoenix Suns, who are desperately in need of a point guard as well. So I really wouldn't mind them seeing if Culver drops, if DeAndre Hunter, heaven forbid. I mean, if he does, God, I would love to see DeAndre Hunter as a Bull. Could play positions 2 through 4, guard them all. Nice two-way player. Jarrett Culver, obviously a good two-way player with that ball handling, his skill, his playmaking ability. He's a really good defender as well. And then Cam Reddish, who a lot of people are polarized on. They don't know, you know, a lot of contrasting opinions about him. You know, high ceiling, but didn't really show it at Duke. I'm probably more optimistic about Cam Reddish's projection than most. I wasn't really at first. I don't like guys who kind of disappear throughout the game. And at Duke, that was pretty obvious of Reddish. You're just like, where is he on the floor? But that can happen when you got Zion Williamson taking up every highlight and then RJ Barrett cleaning up the leftovers on those highlights. Cam did have a few nice games in college, and I think he's going to be a good pro. And I wouldn't mind the Bulls taking a risk at 7. Why not take Cam Reddish at 7? He's not going to start right away. Otto Porter's going to start at the 3. Bring him off the bench, see what he can do. He's in a non-pressure situation. Bulls aren't really ready to contend yet. And if the dude does have a high ceiling and he does work out for him, maybe a little change of scenery away from Duke and away from those superstars, why not? I know there would be a lot of criticism about that pick at 7, but why not? Why not take Cam Reddish at 7? Who knows? Who knows? So Reddish, Culver, Hunter, I'd take any of those guys, even Coby White. Still pretty high on him, but we'll see. All right. Without further ado, you got that two-parter coming up. Bobby Buckets, take it away for us on the Iconic Podcast.
I am in Columbia, Missouri, once again. I have about a month left here until I head back to San Diego for the rest of the summer. We got some good content coming out right now. Really, really good content. And kind of a wide variety, too. So I did a little Padres quarter mark season recap about a week ago. And they're currently losing to the Yankees right now. But I felt good about that quarter season recap. And that went well. And I did a little breakdown of Deontay Wilder, his most recent fight against Dominic Brazil. I don't fight, maybe that's a, whew, that's one way to put it for what happened in Las Vegas. So in the last week, though, the Bucks lose to Toronto in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. This is the first year, obviously, the Eastern Conference does not have LeBron James standing in the way, and so this was kind of a pivotal year for the NBA. It was going to be very telling of the future, and obviously Kawhi's future is in the balance, but man, there's still a slew of teams over there in the Eastern Conference that it is kind of anyone's to grab. And I don't think Toronto grabbing it right now necessarily solidifies anything for the future. But Uncle Luke and I were talking, and Uncle Luke's been he just started a new job in Chicago. And so he's been taking the train to work. You know, he's got 40 minutes, essentially, back and forth every day. And so he's been putting together some ideas about content and the structure and the formatting of which we do it. And so he said, all right, Bo, I need you to give me 20 to 25 minutes on the Milwaukee Bucks season. And we're going to predicate it on this question right here. Okay, and so this is from Uncle Luke, and this is how he wants me to respond in these next 20 minutes about the Milwaukee Bucks, their season. And honestly, he's not the only one asking these questions. These are really good questions. I'm getting these questions from both Bucks fans. I don't know if there's necessarily Bucks haters, but Bucks doubters, and maybe people unknown to what the Milwaukee Bucks did this year. So here it is from Uncle Luke. Quote, congrats on the Bucks' first season of contention. I love already. Great start. A wild ride where expectations were decent, but they obviously blew it out of the water. It was an MVP year for Giannis, all around great season. However, these seasons now have unintended consequences, and he could not be more right about this. The Bucks are now on the clock. This is becoming Giannis's conference league, and that is especially the case if Boston decides to just reshape their structure and format with Kyrie Irving. What do you do with Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart? Gordon Hayward obviously is not, you know, who they thought they were getting when they got him, and post just awful ankle injury. So that is especially if Boston reshapes and Kawhi leaves, leaving Toronto in a really all or nothing kind of mode right now. Moving forward this season or this summer, the Bucks have business to do with Malcolm Brogdon, who's I believe a restricted free agent, and then Chris Middleton. They re-signed and extended Eric Bledsoe. So this is pretty much the core until Giannis's next contract. He wants it that way. Now that is what Uncle Luke is saying, not necessarily me, and I'm going to respond to all this. Obviously, there is zero talk of him leaving, but now the Bucks have to operate as a contender with him. And the expectations and pressure is on moving forward. How do you like the Bucks moving forward, especially with this core? Are you confident in locking up Giannis for the foreseeable future? Are you worried that this core isn't enough as currently constructed? And funny enough, so one of my go-to kind of insiders or guys I like to break things down with the Buck is my cousin Joey Sikora out in Milwaukee. And I'm going to pull up what he sent me. He goes, well, back-to-back conference losses for me. You know, it's a bummer. He's a diehard just Milwaukee guy. Brewers, Bucks, Packers. I mean, that is him. He bleeds all of it. He says he's getting sick of Wisconsin sports. I said, I'm proud. Giannis is 24. They all get better. That was great experience. He says, I get that, but what does this team look like next year? And then I jokingly responded by saying, I'm at the point and I'm letting it fly, and Brogdon or Mirotić will be sixth man of the year. He said, as long as you're letting it fly, I'm cool with it. Okay. So, yeah, Luke's not the only one asking these questions, and they're valid questions. So let's start. Let's just break down this question in every form. So congrats on the Bucks' first season of contention. Thank you, Uncle Luke. I appreciate it. This was the most fun I've ever had as a Bucks fan, without a doubt. The last time they were even kind of close to this good was 2001. Now, I was watching, but I was 4 years old at the time. Ray Allen was the core of that team. You know, Glenn Robinson. They're going up against 76ers and Allen Iverson. I mean, just a completely different time, a completely different era. And it took grind, grit, hard work, patience, all of that, and to battle through those years. Wild ride where expectations were decent, but they were obviously blown out of the water. Yeah, I think my preseason prediction for the Milwaukee Bucks was a 4 seed. And I think that I was hesitant to really say that they'd make the leap this year just because of the faith that I had in Giannis last year. I had a lot of faith that he was going to do some crazy things, and he did. I'm not going to downplay Giannis's 2 seasons ago, but I would say that they probably fell short of where they wanted to be 2 seasons ago. So I was being cautious. I was being I had trepidations about the Milwaukee Bucks this year. Obviously, getting a new coach, you have no idea what that will look like. You have no idea. However, it was an MVP year for Giannis. So I did a video where I talked about the MVP race, and I said, you know, it's really close between Harden and Giannis, and I'm not going to sit here and say Giannis is the MVP because Harden didn't do well enough in the playoffs. I'm not going to sit here and say Giannis deserves the MVP because Harden's team didn't do what they did last year. I think all those are really silly points to bring up when you're talking about the MVP. If I'm going to talk about the MVP race, This is what I will say. One, like James Harden, Giannis is the offense. Point blank, simple. Giannis is the offense. It starts with him. It's him in transition. It's him drawing doubles in the front court, in the half court, and then, you know, driving and kicking. We talked about that, the Daryl Morey kind of system. Daryl Morey's the GM of the Houston Rockets, and they just said today that Chris Paul and James Harden might have not worked as well together as people thought, which I'm kind of surprised to hear. But so this is the Daryl Morey system. It's either you shoot a three or it's a dunk. And that is it. That is the entire system. And so what the Bucks started doing was running this system. I mean, this is vastly different from what they did last year. Last year, they were one of the lowest-ranking teams in shooting three-pointers. And this year, they embraced the mentality of let it fly. And none of this happens without Giannis. None of it. Zip, nada. It's corner threes from kickouts from Giannis. And it's dump downs to bigs, usually coming from a double from Giannis. And so that's what the Bucks did. So that is one point for Giannis getting the MVP. And then the second one here, he's first team all defense in the NBA this year. He is a top three candidate for defensive player of the year. That is why Giannis is the MVP. Because for 75 games in the regular season, whatever it was, and for the games in the playoffs, Giannis was the anchor. You know, Bledsoe also got the nod, and we're going to get to Bledsoe here, probably more towards the end as we talk about the future contracts. But Giannis is the anchor of that defense. And something that separates Giannis from other guys is that when he is protecting the rim and the other team is just going at the rim, they see Giannis under there and they're gonna meet him. So it's time. Let's see. Let's see. Let's play a little chicken. Let's see who wants to go at it at the rim. And so you saw in the Celtics series that Jaylen Brown obviously had no fear going at Giannis. And he got a nice little poster slam onto Giannis. And you know what? All respect to Jaylen Brown. He's a Konzo guy, Cal guy. Love all of it. Love his game. And it's probably one of the probably few bright spots. You know, you look at the Celtics team. So he yams on Giannis. And then, of course, the NBA and its Twitter. And it's so reactive and emotional. Oh, my God. Jaylen Brown just yammed on Giannis. By God, he broke him in half. But you know what Giannis did when he got dunked on? Giannis got off the floor, sprinted down to the offensive end, and ran the system. And he sprinted back, down back on defense to once again set up and be that anchor that the Bucks need. And you know what happens the next possession or the next time down or five possessions later or the next time someone wants to go at the rim? Giannis doesn't give a fuck about getting dunked on. And that is the biggest difference between him and almost any other player in this league. He doesn't care about his image. He doesn't care about this or that. He wants to win games. He's going to protect that paint. And funny enough, Jaylen Brown ended up having another dunk on Giannis later in the series. But that's the nature of the beast. He's going to protect that rim at all costs. And then again in the Toronto series, Giannis just gets yammed on, yammed on by Kawhi Leonard. And of course, people go crazy. Oh my God, Giannis just got baptized by Kawhi Leonard. And I love that stuff. And saying someone gets baptized is maybe my favorite description in all of basketball. But 1 minute later, the Raptors are in transition. Giannis gets back. He's protecting the paint. And he meets Kawhi at the rim and stuffs him. And that's the nature of the beast with Giannis. He's going to come right back at you every single time. It was, man, if you got to watch this guy on a consistent basis to truly understand what he's doing. absolutely remarkable. And the defensive end was, for me, the highlight of it all. He had more mama mentality on the defensive end than he did on the offensive end this year. So now the Bucks are on the clock with these unintended consequences of changing your expectations. This is becoming Giannis's conference league. So they have some business to do with Brogdon and Middleton. Yeah, and we've been asking this question in the Bucks community for a while now. You know, if you had to take your pick, you know, pick two, Bledsoe, Brogdon, Middleton. So we got pros and cons to each of them here. They're all just stellar defenders, which is great. You say that, you know, no matter who you pick, at least you're leaving yourself with great defense. No matter what you decide, you're going to have two lockdown defenders. Eric Bledsoe, first team all defense this year. A lot of people didn't understand why or how that kind of came about. But, oh my God, did you watch any Bucks games this year? Did you listen to any iconic podcast where we talked about the Bucks? I often compared Eric Bledsoe's defense to a safety in the NFL. He was Troy Polamalu this year on the defensive end. Just running around, making plays, using his athleticism. So here's what I would say the downfall to Eric Bledsoe is. One, the offensive end. He was, in the final 5 minutes of most of these Raptors games, he was almost unusable in the late stretch of games. And wow, does that hurt after extending him to a contract. You know, Domas sent me a text at the start of the series when Brogdon wasn't looking so hot. He said, do you regret Bledsoe extension? I said, let me answer that question after the series. Oh, Bledsoe, I gave you a chance, buddy. I really wanted it to happen. But, man, I don't know how you can go forward with a player and know that you really can't use him in the final minutes of a game. George Hill was way more effective. Malcolm Brogdon, coming off of plantar fasciitis, was more effective. Bledsoe's three ball wasn't dropping. He didn't have the confidence to shoot the mid-range game. And a lot of buckets that he was getting in the regular season, well, they all of a sudden weren't there in the playoffs. So, tough. And then there's the downfall to Bledsoe. Now, for Brogdon, the concern is probably also on the offensive end, and it's probably his actual shooting motion, his mechanics. You know, he shoots a shot that's very out in front of him, kind of easy to defend, actually. So most of Brogdon's threes are going to have to come and catch and shoot. And they have to come with space. So now he's shooting deeper threes. And now, you know, Brogdon's 50-40-90 kind of headline. Well, it doesn't work so well. I will say Brogdon in the final 5 minutes is when he is at his best. He is so good in those final 5 minutes. No one's better at driving baseline. I mean, you want to go 5 minutes, possession by possession, toe-to-toe, mano-a-mano, bucket for bucket. There's no one better than the president. That is what guys from Virginia do. They've been doing that for 40 minutes now, and he did it for 4 years. He loves that. Let's grind this thing out. Let's have a 42-46 ball game. That is right up Brogdon's alley. And then Middleton. I would say that the concern with Middleton here, maybe it's not a concern, but the hesitation is probably one, the age, and then two, is he the two? Is he your Robin? Is he going to be good enough to provide Giannis with a supporting, you know, the supporting star? I do. I think Middleton's good enough. Let's break this down. Let's look at the Raptors series, okay? The Bucks go up 2-0, and then they lose 2 in Toronto. Now, the 2 in Toronto, okay, you're never okay with losses. I'm not saying I'm okay with anything. But losses are going to happen in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's normal. Where we ran into an issue is Game 5 at home. Game 5 at home was an issue. And then Game 6, you know, you take a lead. And in the fourth quarter, that thing just dwindled down slowly but surely. But this Game 6 and Game 5, if, and this is going to be my biggest point about the Milwaukee Bucks, this is my overarching thought here for the podcast. Giannis is 24 years old. 24 years old. Not many players are doing what Giannis did when he's 24, and not many surpass what Giannis does at any age in their career. It was an experience thing. Kawhi Leonard, the freaking Terminator, was unstoppable. And the experience, I think, was really evident and apparent in this series. Kawhi had the experience, Giannis didn't. Giannis is going to learn so much, and this series against Toronto will motivate him throughout the rest of the summer and probably through the entire regular season of next year. And when he gets to the playoffs next year, which he will, I think he's going to wreak havoc. It's going to be absolute chaos. His first two rounds, once again, may be a massacre. So Giannis, and here's where I think the experience shown, and I kind of got off track there for a sec, but where Giannis's inexperience showed, and perhaps lack of confidence, whatever it was, but the 16 to 17 footer, when we needed a bucket, we didn't know where to go. You know, Giannis would try and kick it out as they did all regular season, but all of a sudden, those shots aren't as open as they were in the regular season. And those shots weren't dropping like they were in the regular season. What we need Giannis to do in that situation is take a 16-foot pull-up or to take a turnaround from 12 feet or go with a baby hook in the middle. Really, none of those three things happened late in those games. So those final 5 minutes, that's where Giannis has to go kind of Kobe takeover mode. Go Dirk takeover mode as he did in 2011. He has to take over and take 80% of those shots. 80%. I mean, it has to be a ridiculous amount. A ridiculous percentage of those shots need to go through Giannis. And, you know, he shied away from the mid-range shot. But I think moving forward, man, if the Bucks have a lead, you know, next season, next playoffs, when the Bucks have a lead, I think Giannis goes just dagger central, starts hitting mid-range shots. I think this playoffs probably showed people that he can shoot. It's just a little inconsistent at times, and obviously the confidence in the final 5 minutes, it's just a different ballgame. So this is the core that Giannis is dealing with. And I think if this core stayed together, which it sounds like they want to, it sounds like Giannis wants them to, really all the Bucks need is Giannis to hit a couple mid-range jumpers in Toronto in Game 6, and the Bucks are coming home for a Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know how much higher my expectations should or could be. Getting a Game 7 at home is all you ask for. And to get there this year, all we needed was Giannis to hit a couple of mid-range jumpers, a couple turnarounds, and it didn't happen. So, how do you like the Bucks moving forward, especially with this core? Are you confident in locking up Giannis for the foreseeable future? I have no clue. So the Giannis future thing, you know, we got him through 2021, and I don't know if this was a statement by Giannis, but he surely didn't appreciate it So Malika Andrews writes for ESPN. She wrote an article saying that the 2020 NBA Finals will determine Giannis's status as a Milwaukee Buck in the future. I have no idea who she talked to. I don't know where she's getting this information. I do know that when Malika Andrews, I believe that's her name, asked Giannis a question in the final post-game presser, and a lot of people, I guess, didn't realize this, which blows my mind. You know, she goes, hi, question for both of you guys. Malika Andrews, ESPN. You want to talk about the experience or blah, 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 whatever question she freaking said. Giannis, here's the name. He looks down at the piece of paper, and from my understanding, he realizes that it was her who wrote the article. It was her who was creating the speculation. So Giannis gets up and leaves. I think it's telling that Giannis doesn't really want to answer those questions right now. I'm okay with that. Even if Giannis doesn't re-sign after 2021, I could not be more grateful for the time that we've had, and I'm going to enjoy next year as much as possible, like I did this year. So are you worried that this core isn't enough as currently constructed? No, honestly, I'm not. I'm not concerned. We are a couple Giannis pull-ups, turnarounds, and baby hooks, which probably leads to free throws away from a Game 7 in Milwaukee. So, regardless of whatever your expectations are as a sports fan, man, if you aren't happy or aren't satisfied or aren't content with getting a Game 7 at home with a chance to go to the NBA Finals, I can't really help you. I've grown up a Padre fan. I've grown up a Milwaukee Buck fan. You know, for a long time, I was following the Chargers. My dad was a sports photographer for the Chargers. I covered the Chargers' final practice in San Diego. These are my teams. So, man, I just wanted Game 7, and all we needed was a couple Giannis pull-ups away. So that is my wrap on the Milwaukee Bucks season, the Milwaukee Bucks series against the Raptors. At the end of the day, it was an inexperienced thing. You know, Kawhi had the experience, Giannis didn't. We were just a year away or 2 years away from Giannis doing a takeover. And who knows? We might get that next year. I don't know if there's a more promising player in this league than Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. Happy to have him on our side. He does everything I want. He doesn't complain about fouls. He doesn't give BS answers. He doesn't do to the media. He isn't afraid of getting dunked on. He doesn't care about getting on the floor. He gets right back up and sprints down to the other end. He's perfect for the city of Milwaukee. They love him. They embrace him. They worship him. Man, could not be happier as a Bucks fan with your core and your superstar at the age of 24. How's that, Uncle Luke? How does that sound? Pretty happy. You know, usually I wrap things up by saying, let's go home, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, that was for a Raptor, actually. Kenny the Jet said it when then Toronto Raptor, I believe, Vince Carter, went just dunk-tastic in the NBA dunk contest. But I'm going to wrap this one up by saying, fear the deer. All right, so then the second half of this podcast, my plan here is to kind of break down the Padres at the quarter mark. And we have an underlying problem developing right now within the Padres. And I'm going to get to it. But let's start. The Padres just wrap up their series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. They sweep them. It is the first sweep of the season for the San Diego Padres. So let's clap it up right now for the San Diego Padres. And it was just as they're starting to bleed, just as they're starting to fade away. They go under 500 for the first time this season, And that was our goal. That was our expectation that we set early on. We said 500. And they fall one game below 500 before the start of the series. We win game one. We win game two. We win game three. Paddock gets the W. Oh, and we're going to talk about Paddock. But we get the win from Lauer on Wednesday. We get the win from Strom on Tuesday. But I said that the win from Lauer would mean the most on Wednesday. So just as the Padres are starting to fade, they fall below 500. Just as Hosmer slows down from a little bit of a hot streak that he had, he picks it right back up. Huge series for Merrick Hosmer. Oppo blast, RBI singles, doing his job as the leader and captain of this team. Coming up in big moments. And doing it early in these games. One of the problems that the Padres were dealing with during that poor stretch of play was that they were going down early in games. But Eric Hosmer set a tone early. We're going to be involved. We're going to be competitive in these games. And it was so great to see him contribute. And just as we're fading, he picks it right back up. And the Padres sweep. So looking at the Padres here at the quarter mark, what are some of the surprises? What are some of the ups and the downs? I think without a doubt, one of the highlights of this season has been Framil Reyes, the big fella, the Franimal. He has some of the most raw, natural, gifted power I have seen at the plate in a really, really long time. And here's my comparison, and I don't know if this is going to be well received or not. But he reminds me of a golfer from the mid-2000s, Ernie Els. Big, strong, but never really went 100%. Always just ensured that the natural power would do its job for itself. It would do it on its own. All he needs to do is worry about making quality contact, participate in good at-bats, be selective about your pitches, and the power will take care of itself. And although Framil is not, he's not going to end up being one of the top five guys in defensive runs saved on in the outfield, I think that he's been pleasantly surprising with his just, you know, decent athleticism to make plays. He had a sliding grab last week. He's got a decent arm, and he'll improve. And those athletic plays, they go a long way. Other ups, Fernando Tatis. And now, yes, he has been hurt, and yes, he is coming back. But I'm not sure anyone could have expected him to be this good right away. I mean, we knew he would be good. Every Padre fan hoped he would be good. But to expect what he's been and to tune in to this left side of the infield with Machado. And Machado's been fine. He's hitting, I think, 267 right now. And, you know, that'll rise a little bit. He's still going to hit his 30 home runs. I am so not worried. And I'm going to take that infield for granted. It's pretty outrageous at this point how accustomed I've become to watching those two play 5 days a week on the left-hand side. And when they're together, it gives the pitcher so much more confidence. The Padres are just involved in so many more games. So he is coming back. Now, one thing that I was expecting, or I wanted to see, was a lineup. There was a batting order that we wanted to see as Padre fans. And we have not gotten to see it yet, which is kind of a bummer. But here's the lineup. Tatis, Reyes, Machado, Hosmer, Renfro, Franchy Cordero, Mejia, Urias, and then, you know, Paddock hopefully would be pitching. But we haven't seen this lineup yet. This is the ideal lineup. This is what we want to see moving forward. These are all the young guys combining with the current guys. That's a fun lineup. And we have not gotten to see it yet. So I would say one of the disappointments of this season is not seeing this lineup. And one of the reasons we haven't seen this lineup, one is injuries, but two is that we haven't seen consistency or consistent playing time from Urias and Mejia. Mejia just started a rehab stint. He does his thing. I think he had a home run in his first plate appearance back at AAA. And Urias is also down at AAA. But we haven't seen consistent playing time or consistent play from either of them. So moving forward for the rest of the season, I want to see this lineup. Again, it's Tatis, Reyes, Machado, Hosmer, Renfro, Cordero, Mejia, Urias. We haven't seen much of Cordero this year, and that'll come back. Renfro, this is all about expectations. What do we want from him? And I think he's done what we want from him. He's come up in big moments. He is one of the most clutch hitters right now on the Padres, and that power cannot be replaced. So let's talk about the problem. The underbelly. There's an episode of Entourage where Johnny Drama talks about the underbelly of an agency. Vinny Chase feels that Ari is ruining his career, so they want to explore other options. They look at other agencies, and Drama says, you know, like, some places are going to look good. They're going to have an attractive receptionist. They're going to have maybe a nice building, but there's an underbelly. And right now, the Padres have an underbelly that's getting worse and worse. So the core problem of the Padres is this youthful, inexperienced, probably subpar pitching staff, starting rotation. And to counter it, we've had to overextend the bullpen. And so now that bullpen is getting tired and becoming less effective. Well, one of the only starting pitchers who's able to kind of to fight through this has been Chris Paddock, and now Chris Paddock's, you know, 2 years away from a Tommy John injury. So what do we do here? Scott Boras, when, you know, the infamous, the super agent, probably the Ari Gold of the sports world, funny enough. He's already starting to talk about let's limit the innings, let's limit the pitches on Chris Paddock. The Padres probably say, you know what, I get it, I get that concern, but boy, do we need the kid. And Chris Paddock, well, you know what, he's a Texas boy, he's a tough son of a bitch. He wants to go. He is probably the most competitive, most vocal, most emotional players on this Padre team. And if you think that he's going to want to be restricted by an innings limit count, oh, well, then you just haven't been watching enough of this season. So this is the underbelly, and this is the core battle of the San Diego Padres. It will be, at the end of the season, Chris Paddock versus his agent, Scott Boras. Boras, one of the best, most elite, you know, agents, best sports businessmen in this world. Chris Paddock, one of the most competitive, emotional up-and-comers in the league right now. And they're going to go at it. Paddock's going to say, give me the damn ball. I want to go. Boras is going to say, no. Sorry, kid. We're cutting you off. So who's in the right? They're probably both in the right. But if I had to choose, if I had to make a selection, if I have to take a stance and pick a side, you know, I'm probably falling on the side of Scott Boras. And while, you know, I have this expectation for the Padres to be 500 and that this season does mean a lot, it doesn't mean anything. This season doesn't mean shit. It doesn't. And as much as Padre fans want it to be that way, it isn't. So I think putting this innings count on Chris Paddock is a good idea. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be hard because most likely, and it's going to be the worst at this point, as the Padres get deeper into the season, and if they're hovering just above 500 and going on these streaks of where they do play well and looking like they might be able to contend. And no, guys, let's cool it off. Let's focus on the long term here. This is a project. We're not in this for 2019. We don't even have that ace yet. If we want to compete, we have to go get an ace first. But until then, we are not going to extend Paddock. But that is the underbelly of the San Diego Padres. And the reality is, this season does mean nothing. And in this battle of Paddock versus Boris, now I don't know who wins. I think Boris should be the one who wins, and that's the route that we should go with. Woo! All right. That's not bad. That's a decent little recap. Oh, I got a long day of work ahead. It was a long night before. I'll be on Storm Watch. Bobby Storm Watch will be out and about. Bobby Broadcast is on the move. We recap Deontay Wilder. Is he just talking to sell? Is he just talking for intimidation? What is his potential as a U.S. heavyweight star? And why does he not recognize it? That one punch, power, it's unprecedented. No one else in heavyweight boxing has that, has had that probably since Tyson. Shh, I didn't just say that, but I kind of did. Is he just talking? Is he trying to sell the fight? Can he become more than, you know, representing a very small demographic of people who want to see the savagery? He could represent more. He could be, I'm telling you, a U.S. star if he took a more diplomatic approach like Joshua. All right, and then in the second half of this episode, we break down the Padres. This is the quarter mark of the MLB season. It is flying by. And let's just set this acknowledgement right now that this is the most fun we've had as Padre fans, watching games, Padre analysts analyzing these games. This is the most fun we've had in a long time, my friends. This team's not going to compete for anything crazy, but this is a solid little ball club, and we should be in a lot of these games. Let's eliminate the games where we go down early. Let's compete. Let's battle. Hosmer, be the captain. Machado, be the superstar. Framil, be the monster that you are. Continue. Ernie Els, the Big Easy. That raw, you know, uncontainable power will do it on its own. Renfro, keep coming up in clutch spots. The injury guys will come back. That left side, do not take for granted. Be in awe every time you watch them play. Watch them defend. Watch the confidence, the change in the demeanor of the pitchers, knowing that those two guys are on the left side of your infield. And then this underbelly, watch it grow. This battle between Scott Boris, the super agent, versus Chris Paddock, the superstar, the Texas boy, the sheriff. Let's watch how this thing plays out. I'm not going to pretend to know the answers, but I'm trying to stay focused on the long term here. And if I had to pick a side, I think I fall on the Scott Boris side. You look at what happened to Matt Harvey in his career, overextending himself early on post Tommy John surgery, and he faded. We don't want that for Chris Paddock. We want him in the long haul. This is our guy going forward. All right. Episode 22 of the Iconic Podcast is in the books, ladies and gentlemen. So, one more thing to do. Let's go home, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go home.
Let's go home. Big clap to this. make them.